AM 950, the progressive voice of Minnesota. It's the Matt McNeil Show for your Thursday. I am actually here today. Wow, indeed. We have had, of course, our usual exceptionally fun and wonderful lineup of brand new to you shows. We've got one more for you coming up here tomorrow on a New Year's Eve with Dolores Pringle from the Penn Center, as well as others. We're looking forward to that. So it's been a lot of fun. We hope you've enjoyed those. Live here today, I got a lot to get to today. Actually, a shockingly large amount of things to get to today. Once again, tomorrow, brand new to you show. And then we are back on Monday. We hope you're having a wonderful New Year's. Patrick is here. Patrick, how are you, my friend? Did you have a nice holiday?
It was really good. How was yours?
I did very well. Gone on out. I did the Glow Festival over at the State Fairgrounds. That was nice. Took a tumble out there. I came out of the Santa exhibit right down. Whip! Now, I wasn't even on the slide. First of all, I'm going to be honest with you. I wasn't drunk enough to get on that slide. I'm not going to go down that. I mean, it seemed a little bit like, can you sign this waiver? Oh, really? Okay, no, I'm not going to do that then. But got out there, lovely to see the lights out there. Went back to the Walker Art Museum yesterday. I was at the MIA a few days ago. Just a nice time getting out and doing some things. Going to be staying inside. As a matter of fact, coming up in the 5 o'clock hour, Sven Sundgaard's going to stop on by. Talk about this really cold spell that we're going to get for New Year's Day. We'll talk about that. We're going to miss the snow. That sounds like it's going to head south of us. We'll talk about that later. But since it is our last show of 2021, thank God, another year we can get rid of. And this is kind of a tradition here. It's time for Jeff.
Jeff, Jeff, Jeff. Jeff, 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 Jeff. J-E-F-F, Jeff. J-E-F-F, Jeff.
Jeff Stein's our national and presidential expert, noted author. You can find his books over at nextchapterbookstotallyiowa.com, the Iowa Business Report, especially if you like your business with a little side of the ag side of things and see how things are going. The Iowa Business Report is his daily show he does down there. And, of course, the Iowa Politics Report comes to us from KXEL Cedar Falls, Waterloo. And Jeff joins us for his annual usual end-of-the-year review. Hi, Jeff.
I'm a little upset. I had to sign a waiver before I did your radio show. What do you mean you're not going to sign a waiver to do the slide down the hill?
Do you know? Okay, so if you want to start with the Matt McNeil year in review, not only did I have a hip replacement surgery, I had a kidney condition that nearly killed me. So you know what? I don't need to get down. I'm 53. I don't need to get on an inner tube and bounce my way down an ice hill. I'm cool. I'm good. No, I've done that. I'm all right with that. How about you, Mr. Stein? Are you willing to go on up there and bounce your way down?
There is not a chance. It is not, because here's the thing. I have my own issues.
Yeah.
God knows I have my own issues. I don't have a kidney issue.
Okay.
I have not needed a hip replacement.
All righty.
And I have a feeling that if I did just go bouncing my little body down the hill, I would need a hip replacement. I would have a kidney. It's like, why pick something up? Why push my luck? So, no, I'm not going. I had someone today. There is a facility for those who have physical limitations called Camp Courageous in Iowa.
It's okay.
They have now installed a zip line, and it is this huge zip line. And a person who uses a wheelchair said to me today, oh, I can't wait for the summer. I'm going to do the zip line. What about you? And I said, there is not enough money you can pay me to do the zip line. You want to do a zip line? You go help your darn self. I am just sedentary as all get out, and I'm good with that.
I was over at the Glow Festival at the fairgrounds in St. Paul. I came out of the Santa Hut, which actually was cool because it had some of the old Macy's Dayton's 8th floor decorations in there. I came on out, right down I went. I know it sounded bad because my wife and my daughter are immediately like, oh, my God, are you okay? That sort of thing. And I'm like, all right, I'm fine. I'm fine. Pride, all this stuff. But I'm at the point now where people are like, oh, my God, he fell? You know, and it's, you know, that's not a good place to be. I mean, it's and the next thing you know, it's like, oh, my, you want to actually walk to the restaurant? I mean, okay, stop. I mean, I'm not there yet.
Okay, there are two things. First of all, you were kind enough to send me a holiday card.
Yes.
And you have a family tradition where you have the whole family. It's a beautiful photo. You outkicked the coverage when you married her, and luckily the kids favor her side of the family. But it's a beautiful family. But the other thing I noted, I mean, that's true. It's a beautiful family. I always like getting the card. But here's what I noticed. It's like the kids are kind of around you, like holding Dad up. It almost looked like I'm supposed to be led to believe that you have your arms around your loving family. They're holding you up.
Oh,
right?
God, it is. It really is. It's kind of like the facade is gone. It's, oh, here he comes. Get him propped up here. You know, get the rope and pulley system so he doesn't go down. It's like a Macy's Thanksgiving Day for a balloon at this point.
Well, with a windstorm coming down Fifth Avenue. But the problem is, this is what I get at home a lot. Well, since you fall down a lot, it's like, wait, what? First, define a lot, you know. It's because I'm older than you are, and it ain't any fun.
Well, tell you that. Hey, by the way, just keep an eye out, too. I got you one of the calendars, too. That's going to that's heading your way there. And this time, in time for 2022. All right, so as we get ready to end this year.
Yeah, let's do.
This is the year America woke up and said, we slept with who? And it really kind of, I mean, I know that sounds like, you know, a little bit kind of snarky, but it really was. And I think it, because we started out with an attempt to overthrow the democracy of this country, perpetrated, I mean, and the more we learn about it, it's clear this was not just some random people. This was Trump, his administration, members of Congress, a lot of his enablers. This was a coordinated overthrow of the government attempt. And it was, you know, and it's not just Democrats. There's a lot of Republicans like, what just happened? And there just was this the entire year. And of course, coronavirus sticking around. This was a year of malaise, to say the least.
Well, I have looked. This is the time where you look back at 21 and you look ahead at 22. All right. Usually we can say, well, there, that's the end of this year. This is the start of the next. Well, the issues broadly that we have right now, they're going to carry over. There is no neat little end to the year. We've had some years where it's going to be a change in the makeup of Congress, let's say. And it goes from one party to the other just after the first of the year. There was one year where they passed a budget on New Year's Eve or something. I mean, there are certain things where you can actually say this was this year, this is this one. 1999 into 2000. You know, these kinds of things. But this is just a morphing. And the key issues that we faced in 2020 became the key issues in 2021 because of COVID. And the same ones carry over into 2022. And so it is just this continuous slog, if you will. Now, the distinction is the one that you made, because we don't really have the answers with regard to January 6th. Now, you might say that the American people woke up in late 2020 and said, we slept with who? Because of the election, right? And so in that case, well, even that carried over into this next year, or into from 20 into 21. Here's the thing that is going to be pivotal for 2022, and it is how credible the average citizen finds the things that the January 6th committee comes up with.
Yeah.
Because they are working on it, and I know you've discussed this on the program, I'm sure we have not, but so I'll bring it up as if it just occurred to me. With apologies if you've talked about it to death, but the committee is now looking at members of Congress.
Yeah.
Because there's a constitutional provision that bars you from holding office if you've led an insurrection against the government you then pledge to serve. And that is why there is such attention, not just because right is right, there is such attention being paid on people like Jim Jordan and others, because there's going to be this move to say, if you were a ringleader, if you orchestrated all of this, then by gosh, we're going to make sure you can't hold elective office again as a midterm election comes about. And they're going to be the test case for Trump, because it's a very different situation when you're talking about a chief executive voted into office different ways. That was why the Democrats wanted to impeach him in the House a second time, why they did do it, but that's why they pushed to do it, with the hope that there could be a Senate trial, because if he were to have been convicted in the Senate, then he would be barred. There, that's one of the real solid angles, and why you're seeing so many of these Republican congressmen not wanting to have this explored very deeply, because it's their own political careers at stake. And that goes back, finally, to your basic point. They slept with who they slept with for the power, for access. The minute they thought they could get rid of Trump, as in, looks like the election's not going his way, oh, sorry, you know, we're done with it. January 6th, even his most ardent followers, Lindsey Graham, of all people, said, that's it, I'm done. Well, he's obviously not done. And none of the others are done, because Trump doesn't go away and he'd still win the nomination. Everything we've been talking about aside, he'd still win the nomination if the convention were today. And that's the problem for Republicans, is that usually somebody loses and goes away.
Mm-hmm.
Not so much here.
And by the way, you bring up the point. I thought it was very interesting and very pointed that Liz Cheney was the one that responded to Trump today in regards to his lie that basically the House, the 1-6 committee is not seeking his documents anymore, which is, I don't know what he thought he was getting away with, but Liz Cheney said, oh, no, we're getting them. when you look back on, I want to bring up two points of history. I mean, obviously, the penultimate historical uprising against the government was the Civil War, obviously. The Southern states fighting the United States of America, with the U.S. winning after 4 years of bloody battle. Well, that's not debatable. There have been other attempts, the Whiskey Rebellion, the Smedley-Butler affair at the beginning of the FDR administration, which are definitely remembered, recognized, taught in history classes. But when you look at what happened on 1-6, it's pretty remarkable that you were going to have a president who was impeached twice, and that's not what the first thing that they're going to remember him for. They're going to remember him for this attempted overthrow of the country. And as much as he's trying to wipe the stink off of him right now, it's clear that that it was all about him and what was going on. The fact that we now know from Meadows that we talked about a few weeks ago that you know, everyone was frantically calling and saying, for God's sakes, go tell him to stop this. And he wasn't. And I think that as more of this comes out, I think you're right. It's going to be an interesting year in 2022 on how this resonates. But the reality is there's – it's the only option that – his enablers and the right-wing media, namely Newsmax, OAN, and to a point, and even to a point, Fox News, the only way that they can get around this is just to not even talk about it. And that's what I think is going to eventually happen. Is the question here is will the people that follow him just not hear about this enough to where it will be negated?
Normally, I would say that regardless of what the January 6th Commission comes up with, commission, committee, I don't know, potato, potato, whatever they come up with, Trump followers can dispute it and dismiss it out of hand, Matt, because, well, our guys weren't allowed to be on the committee. You know, they wouldn't let Jordan on there. They wouldn't let whomever. And then, so it's a rigged deal. You can get away with doing that. But here's where Trump can't get out of his own way. And this is something we've talked about now for, what, 6 years overall. Trump's going to have a news conference on January 6th.
Yeah.
Okay. Now, I cannot understand why Nancy Pelosi wants to have a commemoration either. Okay, but that's a whole different issue. I'll deal with that in a second. You're Trump. Why in the world would you have a news conference on January 6th? It makes no bloody sense to me whatsoever. Now, again, I don't understand why the speaker would want to do it. I'm not sure what the commemoration would be. I just don't understand why anybody would want to go there right now in the midst. Let the committee do its work. Let the committee do its work, come out with its findings. Those who are prone to ignore that kind of stuff because it's a rigged deal, they're going to ignore it no matter what. Those who are hyper-partisan the opposite way, they're going to read double into it. But the muddy middle of America could look at that objectively if the rest of the histrionics don't overtake things. And so instead of actually getting the meat, I mean, we're talking about specifics. You and I talk about specifics that are coming up to the committee. But most folks are going for the glossy show of, oh, there's Nancy, black dress, the one she wore for Trump's impeachment, and she's going to preside over this. And then, oh, no, let's see what Trump does with his news conference. And it's all the sideshow. And that's really unfortunate because I know why Trump's doing it. He's just going to do the I'm right, I'm right, I'm right. I don't think it's a good idea. But why Pelosi's doing it to get in the way of the committee
help. I'll just say everything. I mean, you commemorate the police officers that were attacked. And because, I mean, let's face it.
Fine.
And let's just, you know, there are a handful of Capitol police officers who are a major reason this country's democracy did not fall, that held back this unruly mob.
And there's a number, and they're never. Some of these are never going to be the same.
Yeah, and a lot of them are going through a lot of mental anguish. If you want to sit there and say, I don't know why Nancy Pelosi is doing this, I know exactly why Nancy Pelosi is doing this. And it's, I think it's to commemorate them. And whether or not you want to be, you know, really political and just say, well, it's for her to remind people of who was really attacked that day and what really did happen. Fine. But the reality is that we have not done enough to commemorate those police officers who did stand in the way. I mean, the one guy, that image that's going to be the image of the year, where the one police officer, the African-American police officer, is sitting there with his hand out saying stop to an unruly mob of white people. That is really we do need to remember that. And as at the end of the day, that's one of the major stories here that needs to be remembered, is that there was a handful of Capitol Police officers who basically stood out there and stopped that mob.
I have no problem with anything you just said. Here's the problem I have is her manner in going about it. I don't know why you announce a big thing. You can do it. You should do it. But potentially it should be a speech from the well of the House to say it was 1 year ago today that democracy was threatened in this very chamber, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. What I had been reading, and I'm perfectly willing to be wrong and may well be, but what I was reading is that she was planning something much more grandiose. People who put on a uniform, we cannot thank them enough in so many contexts, all right? Certainly Capitol Police that day, those who are fighting overseas at various points, okay? So I have no problem with that. I'm having a little problem with how much of it is more of an orchestrated show as opposed to purely a show of support.
Yeah.
I'm fine if that's the purpose. I'm afraid it's getting a little tugged, and I think that diminishes the sacrifice made by the Capitol Police.
One person is still in office, the other person isn't. I mean, there's your validation right there. 952-946-6205, 952-946-6205. Let's take a break. Come on back, because in the wake of this, both parties are having a lot of infighting. We'll talk about that as well. It's Jeff Stein joining us for a year-end review. Look ahead to 2022. It's the Matt McNeil Show right here on AM 950. AM 950, the progressive voice of Minnesota, the Matt McNeil Show. Jeff Stein joining us, year in review, and look ahead to next year. Jeff, this year, I will start with this because we just got a short segment here. I want to get into the Democrats first. The problem they seem to have, and this is something you and I have talked about, when you have a political party where Bernie Sanders and Colin Peterson are supposedly under the same umbrella, that's just too wide of an umbrella. And you cannot have a – and we are seeing the problem that they have. I mean, they're too quick to gobble up anyone that came out of the Republican Party, didn't realize how wide their umbrella was getting. And now they're trying to pass policy, and people sit there dumbfounded because they get Sinema and Manchin, who, you know, Sinema clearly is bought off, but Manchin, who is, you know, well, also probably he's got one coal baron pulling his chain. But I mean, it's at the same time they're kind of surprised, like, okay, why is not policy resonating when you're basically you've got the old moderate Republicans all the way to socialist Democrats under one umbrella?
I only snickered because those were tremendous examples. Here's Colin Peterson. Here's Bernie Sanders. Yeah, what do they have in common?
Nothing.
Party identification and, well, actually, with Bernie, not even that.
No,
this was the problem, and it happens a lot in governing, right? When the whole idea is to say, let's beat this guy, and in this case it was Trump, even though we're talking about the House here, but when the whole idea is, let's get Trump. All right, they got him. Now what? You know, when Biden got the nomination, we seem to forget that a lot of candidates pulled out all of a sudden at the same time and threw their support to Biden as part of a Stop Bernie movement. So you get this coalition together, and they find that once they have fulfilled the goal of getting Trump, they don't have enough in common to govern. And that's been part of Biden's problem. He's president, but it was such an odd patchwork, a coalition that got him the nomination. Now everybody wants their due, and they can't agree on the basic things.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, the fundamental point, lastly, of legislating is you figure out what you can do, get it done, and then move on to the other things. And there is one wing of the Democrats now who say, we've got the numbers, we have the majority, go for everything. Go big or go home. Half a loaf is not better than no loaf at all. And that's where the problem is right now. The margins are too slim for them to have as fractured a coalition, and that makes it just darn difficult to govern, which is difficult on a good day.
Well, and it also should be mentioned here, I mean, the Republicans don't have this problem because they are such a unified. And one of the problems, and I mean, I know this is something I'll always get brushed back from Democrats when I say this, but it's the truth is sometimes they are too accepting of differing opinions. And they love to have this differing opinions, and they pat themselves on the back of they have all these differing opinions. But then when it comes time to actually pass legislation, you've got too many differing opinions. And once again, the Republicans can pass, and whether it's, you know, in the most obscenely far right bill, and yet every Republican swims in the same direction. Very rarely do they ever get out of line. I'm not necessarily for that, but I at least think the Democrats should put out a standard that says, if you are going to be a Democrat and run under the Democratic banner, you have to be for this, 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 and this, and that's just the deal. And if you're not, then you're not a Democrat. And I think it would serve their party pretty well to at least create some base standards.
Well, and of course, the Republicans that you might talk to about this would say, well, John McCain certainly, you know, dot, dot, dot. Okay, fine. But here's the point. When you have such tight margins, what is it, 6 votes in the House, tie vote with tiebreaker in the Senate, it's darn difficult to get anything done, anything huge, okay, to get anything huge done. I believe the National Medal of Honor Memorial Monument on the National Mall, I believe that passed just before Christmas unanimously. Okay, get that kind of stuff done on ones where maybe it's 75-25. You know, frankly, the bipartisan infrastructure bill is another example. Keep it to the point that you can get things done. Because this idea of leveraging massive bills with so many different components, there are just too many tentacles when the margin is so tight. And, you know, Republicans are having a whale of a problem right now trying to expand their tent, especially when it comes to LGBTQ issues, because here's the thing. The RNC is pushing aggressively to recruit Hispanic and LGBTQ. And the problem is the far-right conservative Republicans are alienated by this, but the National Party doesn't care because, as they say, where are those other guys going to go? Right? Where are they? They're not going to become Democrats. Where are they going to go? Well, they're going to go home. It's what yes. they're going to do. And so at least with the Democrats, you've at least had some agreement on coalitions. Yeah. And the trick is they just didn't sit down enough past their hatred of Trump to figure out, what can we actually do going forward?
Let's take a break. Come on back. Let's get into the Republicans because they actually got a far more fascinating divide starting to form there. Joe Biden. We'll talk about his year as well as also a look ahead toward 2022. Jeff Stein joining us for a good chunk of this hour. 952-946-6205. It's the Matt McNeil Show right here on AM 950. AM 950, the progressive voice of Minnesota. It's the Matt McNeil Show. Jeff Stein talking the end of 2021, the beginning of 2022. Jeff, in the aftermath of the 1-6 riots, the insurrection, there is an interesting thing, especially, and I'm going to guess in the last 3 months about, that has started to develop within the Republican Party, and nothing highlights that more than what happened in Kentucky. Now, obviously, tornadoes tore through Kentucky, wiped out some western Kentucky towns. As you talked about, things that, you know, rarely get universal support, even, you know, all the people were like, okay, send in the federal government. Let's fix this town. Let's fix these people, you know, people there. Mitch McConnell, who put aside his disagreements with Biden, was very congratulatory and very appreciative, was very openly supporting of Biden and his help he was giving Kentucky. Even Rand Paul was coming on out there. Joe Biden is on the street, and someone screams, "Let's go, Brandon." Now, the thing which is bizarre about that is there's a very decent chance that person's entire life has been wiped out. And Joe Biden is there to try to help. And it didn't matter. There is this belligerence which is now starting to permeate and percolate out of the party, where that even if Joe Biden was the fire department showing up to put your house out on fire, that they'd say, "I don't want him doing it. I'd rather watch my house burn," and they'd sit and smile. And the reality is if the Republican Party becomes, and I'll say it, the party of Marjorie Taylor Greene, the Republicans are lost, and they are not going to be able to recover if that ends up being the main driving point. That kind of mentality is the deciding factor within that party.
There are people who say and do things out of desperation. So if you're someone who just lost everything, I don't trust your reaction at all. But again, why would you go out of your way at that point to say anything? This is the point, and I'm not forgetting your main point here, but I mean, this is what I don't understand about people, especially social media, which is about as antisocial a creation as ever.
Agreed.
But, I mean, you know, let's say, for example, I'm going to change some of the names here, but let's say I was filling in for Matt McNeil.
Okay.
All right? God forbid the audience would go away in droves, all right? But let's say I'm filling in for Matt McNeil, and I post on Twitter, "Hey, filling in for Matt McNeil, who's a little under the weather." The number of people who would reply all, or, you know, would post a reply, make sure it was included, to say, "I hope he has COVID and dies," you know. Why? Why would you take a brain cell and do that? It's not like the people who are the subject of it are going to know about it, are going to care. What benefit is there to you to focus on a negative thing like that? But there are so many people who do that. And that's the thing that when our so-called leaders condone it and encourage it, that then sends a very bad signal. I mean, you should have enough respect for the office of the president to not yell something derogatory when he's surveying storm damage. I don't get the whole point of that.
Or, by the way, now, and we should mention, or on Christmas Eve when they're taking calls from the family members, and basically some idiot from Oregon yells this on Christmas Eve on a Christmas call. I mean, that belligerence, though,
seemed like a knucklehead. Oh, just seemed like a complete knucklehead, all right?
Yeah.
But how do you get past the sentry, in essence, right? I mean, how did they pick this family for a call? And if he was, like, just making a joke, why would you say that? I don't understand.
Exactly.
There's another longer – well, I'll just tell the short part of it. My email list gives me the stuff from the White House pool. And the first I heard of it was the subject line said, caller says, "Let's go, Brandon." I'm like, what the heck? And I'm sitting there working at home. And I open up the email, and the reporter said that the caller said, "Let's go, Brandon." And this is what he wrote. "Biden appeared to ignore the slight and moved on." Well, that's not what happened.
No.
Right? I mean, the president responded in a way that led folks on the right to have a field day. And then they wound up, a different reporter corrected it. And it's like, okay, now wait a minute here. This is just getting way too crazy here about things. If we don't have good information that we can trust on all sides, how in the world are we going to be able to shout down the idiots? Now let's talk about Marjorie Taylor Greene. You see how I just kind of slid right in on
Well, but you see, that is a legit. I mean, I understand what you're saying. I mean, that used to be, there was a guy, Washington Post had a story about the guy. He said, I carry a flag that says Trump won. When he was coming down to help out with damage, he took the flag down because I didn't want to be that guy.
Yeah.
There are, I mean, Mitch McConnell didn't want to be that guy. I don't want him coming here, even though we're tornado damage. He didn't want to be that guy. But the reality is that there is this element of the Republican Party that loves being that guy, that Christmas doesn't matter or tornado damage doesn't matter. The well-being of their families doesn't matter as long as it's a I hate you all the time. That is just unbelievable. And this is not going away within the Republican Party.
Well, and that's the thing, where there are enough outlets these days that anybody can get a voice. And that's one of the problems. All right. Because, for example, if you go back to, you know, Grandpa here in the rocking chair, if you go back to the old days, even at the beginning of cable television 40 years ago, all right, there was a sense of balance. There was a sense of neutrality. Now, you may say, well, you know, we now know that Cronkite was a liberal. Yeah, but a lot of people couldn't figure that out on the air.
Nope.
Most people couldn't, or he couldn't have had the career he had. All right. Well, now everything is so fragmented and so niche-based that you can be Newsmax, One America News, what's the other one, Real America's Voice. You can be one of these outlets and outfox Fox to the right and then just keep going, because all you have to do is buy time on the satellite, right? There's an infinite amount of spectrum if you're willing to pay for it. And so there's no filter for balance. And I dare say if you tried to put a balanced program on the air, you'd have a hard time getting an audience, because we've now conditioned a whole generation or more that the way you get information is not to consume a variety of viewpoints and determine what's right. It is to only hear that which you are predisposed to agree with in an echo chamber. And that's not a good recipe for democracy. And the whole point is, people who would never get a sniff in the old days now have millions of followers hanging on their every tweet.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't know that that's proving to be such a good thing.
When we bring up the point you mentioned earlier about Republicans staying home, and when you look at this in the micro niche of the Republican Party, if they can't get this under control, because Marjorie Taylor Greene is not the Republican Party, I'll be the first to say it. She's representative of that Michelle Bachmann side of the party, and the people love her. But in a vacuum, because you have the traditional leaders, well, A, they've moved further to the right than they've ever been in that party, but as B, they're just not willing to go on out there and bash on Trump like, you know they've seen what happened to Liz Cheney. They don't want to go down there. As long as there's that vacuum, that still exists. If this, in 2022, if the Republican Party becomes the party of Marjorie Taylor Greene and this Trump kind of idealism, they're not going to win back the House. They're sure not going to win back the Senate. And they're going to set themselves up for failure. Now, it might be a good thing for them, because then in 2024, they might be able to shake that away from them. But right now, they're already salivating over winning. And I got news, if it's going to be, you know, Mo Brooks, Louis Gohmert, and Marjorie Taylor Greene, they might want to think that they've got pull, but the reality is, in a lot of areas, especially suburban areas, which lean Republican, they are going to get destroyed.
Here's the best thing for Democrats right now. The number of Republicans who have talked about this landslide red wave, and they're going to have massive majorities by this time next year. Because, first of all, Republicans have shown a propensity for screwing up great opportunities in elections. Okay, they usually come from nowhere by surprise. But when they're sitting here now, it's overconfidence, because they think, because they're getting a lot of airplay, that translates into votes. You know, so again, cite Lindsey Graham, who apparently just said, we're going to have this massive landslide next year. Show me any evidence to suggest that's the case. And if the best you can do is a poll with a generic ballot, those things have never been worthwhile, never more fraudulent, if you will, than right now. The issue with regard to Republicans is, and I'll take it to something that I heard today. Brace yourself in the chair, because I'm going to throw you a name from the past.
Okay.
Sarah Palin.
Ugh.
I told you to brace yourself. Okay. Sarah Palin said she's considering running for public office again.
Oh, God.
Okay. Now, all of that aside, I should have made sure you weren't drinking a tasty beverage, because I don't want you to have to spray the wall when I said that. But could she get elected today? And that's the point I was getting at. She's saying, you know, I'm thinking for running for office again. Okay, I don't know where, I don't know for what, but your member in 2008, she was kind of out there. Is she so far, quote, neutral, mainstream, normal in the party that she couldn't get a sniff nowadays? And that just shows you how these things progress, regress, if you will, or at least shift over the course of time.
Yeah, and I will say this, and this is the problem for the Republicans. She probably could win the primary. She probably would not win the general election. And I mean, depending on the, you know, if it was a, you know, a designed district for a Republican to win, sure. But yeah.
You have to assume it would be in Alaska.
Yeah.
You have to assume it might be U.S. Senate, et cetera. And remember, she endorsed Trump back in the Iowa caucuses in 2016, 2015 into 2016. But, you know, can she even get the nomination given how far the party has moved?
I don't know. And that's the problem, is that if all of a sudden it's, you know, guys talking about, you know, ivermectin up the backside, is that's your ticket up and down, it's not going to resonate well.
That's a lot to put on a campaign bumper sticker.
Yeah,
ivermectin up the backside. Vote McNeil. I mean, that's just great. I love that.
No, for me. I'm not going to take that one. That's not my campaign. All right, final thing.
Yes,
Biden.
Yes.
Joe Biden, here's the deal about Joe Biden. He's just, I think he came into office. Obviously the pandemic, he's still dealing with it. I mean, I find it funny that people are like, I'm not going to get vaccinated, but why isn't this gone away? All right. But at the same time, I think his first year of presidency is basically surmised he's having to fix a lot of things. Mm-hmm. He did get the infrastructure bill, which is a good bill. He got that infrastructure bill through, but that's probably going to be, well, it's clearly going to be the end of it for this year. I think a lot of it depends on how quickly they can get – I mean, if we can get this rounded up, if we can get by mid-year, pandemic is basically in the rearview mirror, then I think that he'll be in a much better position to help the Democratic Party come the primaries and come up in the midterms.
Well, obviously, pandemic is a moving target, right?
Yeah.
I mean, they keep changing the rules of the darn thing with variants, et cetera. I think he overplayed his past experience in this respect. It's a much more physical game nowadays, right? I mean, I think he truly thought, I can just sit down with Joe Manchin and we'll work it out. It'll be fine. And I'm not criticizing him for it. I'm just saying it's now a different playing field. I think he thought, hey, I've done this for 50 years. I'm the guy Barack sent to Capitol Hill to twist arms in the Senate, yeah, which he did, right, successfully. Well, now there's a generation removed. There are people there in the House and the Senate who say, Joe who, in essence. They didn't serve with him. They don't have the background. Overplayed, wasn't as prepared for that level of change as he might have been. That's a small little thing, okay? Plus, again, I've only met him a few times for interviews. He seems very much the type who wants to please people. He wants everybody to get along. He'll get feisty on you, but he wants, you know, he's just a very... I don't know, just kind of a welcoming guy, his politics aside. That's not the audience he has there in Washington right now, okay? So I think, though, to your point, the stuff that he's been saying recently with regard to putting a little more onus on states and some of this, I think that is a sign toward. We got to do something to turn the narrative. We got to do something so that we can stem this pandemic, because it's a very different variant that we have right now, and we just have to get people used to what might be a new normal. And if he can accomplish that with different verbiage, like there is no one national solution, A lot of people are, you know, saying he's backtracking, and it sounds like it, but let's see what the nuance is. Let's see what that actually means. Because there are all these governors, Matt, finally, who say, well, you should let me take care of it. By God, I know what to do. You know, do I have a problem with him saying, okay, big shot, you think you know, go for it.
The next thing is going to be finding Ron DeSantis, because he's disappeared off the planet at this point. So that's the next mystery, Joe Biden mystery that's going to happen.
Here's the only thing. He might be dealing with his wife's cancer treatments. I'm not positive on the timing. I think that was kind of part of the current. But if
that was the case, he should be just announcing it. I don't think a problem with it. He's just not announcing it. That so.
Yeah. No. That's fair.
I wouldn't. I'm not going to even ask you to predict the year, because there's too many moving targets at this point. But I will just say this: Happy New Year, Jeff. Thank you very much. I appreciate your time as always, and we will talk to you next Wednesday. And just have a regular update with you then. Okay.
You are one of the best. I enjoy the conversation. I enjoy the friendship. I hope the audience does, too.
Thank you, Jeff. I appreciate it. Happy New Year. We'll take a break. Come on back. I got to get the Minnesota coronavirus update in before we get to the top of the hour. It's the Matt McNeil Show right here on AM 950.